Session number 9956.
Michael Owen, Reel 7. You were telling me about the problems you were having during the approach to deal with this machine gun post at Sicily.
Yes, there were these three Italians, and we went aground, as I say, with the rope and the propeller, and this McQuillan came up on deck, and I told him, I said, if you can clear that, there'll be no action taken against you. Well, his starkers, he went over the side, and there was machine gun fire, and he did clear the propeller, and we were able to fire at this machine gun position to take its attention away from these naval commandos who landed safely, and then the three of them realized that the game was up, and they ran very close. They ran up the hill, the brush. And sadly, on reflection, I think we killed two of them, and one of them was taken prisoner. Certainly we killed one, one was wounded, perhaps, or killed, I don't know. But we got out of the scene pretty quick. There was nothing bravado about this. This was our job, and it was done.
How effective? You said it was a pillbox, a concrete one.
Yes, it was a concrete pillbox on the entrance to the bay.
How effective would your 5.2 machine gun?
20.5 machine gun, in my view, very little against the pillbox. Very little. Certainly, the smoke mortar, and I can't remember whether we did. We probably must have put some smoke mortar to cover those. The 4-inch smoke mortar to cover the naval party that was going ashore, beach party. But I don't think that, quite honestly, that our twin point fires would.
It was more, as you said, to distract them.
That's right. That's
give them
right.
Something else to think
yes,
about.
Yes, yes.
So after you'd dealt with this machine gun post, what happened then?
Well, we came back to the Tegelberg. I remember seeing a Canti aircraft, Italian Canti aircraft, shot down by a Spitfire, and the poor pilot, there was only one I saw, parachute down, and he landed probably 8 miles out to sea, and I didn't see anybody going to his rescue. But we went back to the Tegelberg.
How did you've been in action again there. How did you feel in action? What were the sort of emotions and feelings that went through your head at the time?
Well, it was... that action was really negligible in a way. I mean, no line shoot, but it wasn't. They did fire at us, yes, but they did hit the craft. But I think we were pretty safe.
The armor you'd got or sheeting you'd got.
Yes, I think we were pretty safe compared to what happened in Salerno. It was nothing, nothing at all.
So this you were able to. Controlled your fears by analysing that you weren't in that much danger.
Yes, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. And so then we proceeded, the convoy proceeded to Philippeville Bone in North Africa, and we were told to anchor off. No, I beg your pardon. We went to Malta. We went to Malta, and we were only there a matter of hours, and then from there to Philippeville and Bone, and we anchored off, and to our great disappointment, we were told that we should, the flotilla, and myself included, was to disembark. And I very well remember we weren't going home, because the orders were to go home to UK. And I well remember it was a lovely day. We put all our goods into these landing craft, and we were lured, and we were going towards Philippeville when we were ordered back. And so we went to Oran, where we picked up something like 3,000 Italian prisoners of war to bring them back to the UK. And out into the Atlantic we went, and there we came one afternoon. I was on the upper deck in the Tegelberg. It was fairly low cloud, and these Italians were taking their afternoon walk on the. They were allowed up on the upper deck, when a Focke-Wulf Condor, you know, the large four-engine Condor aircraft, suddenly broke cover, came out of the clouds and dropped a bomb very close to us. It didn't do any damage, but I well remember seeing a warrant officer, Italian warrant officer, hit one of his men under his command, who went berserk. And I had a great admiration for that warrant officer, because he wasn't going to see his men act as cowards. Poor fellows, they'd been through the desert, they'd been bombed to hell there. So I had a sympathy for them. Well, we came back to...
What security measures were taken? You had 3,000...
We had a number of... I think they were delighted to get out of it, the Italians. I don't think we had many troops. I'm sure we hadn't. I suppose they could have taken over, but they were damn pleased to get out of it, particularly after Sicily.
What conditions were they?
Oh, they were in good conditions. There was, from my recollection, they were well treated. I'm sure of it. But we went to King George V's dock in... King George V's dock in Glasgow. And I remember seeing this warrant officer going down the gangway, and there was this Argyll, Sutherland, Highlanders. At any rate, the Scottish soldiers had not been in action at all, and one of them, a sergeant, went up and kicked this warrant officer, and I was fortunately looking over the side. Pronto I went down, and I never forget giving that bastard sergeant a hell of a bloody ticking off, because, yeah, he hadn't been in action, and it was very easy, and I suppose our own prisoners of war suffered the same. They hadn't been in action, and they were taking it out on these Italians, which this one was a particularly brave man. And we went on leave, and what really annoyed me intensely was the ship was put under dockyard management for repair, living quarters, and when I came back, I found that all my goods had been stolen, which annoyed me, with the dockyard mateys doing that sort of thing.
Was that common amongst dockyard people, or was it thought to be common?
I think it was, I'd be quite honest. I think it was. And didn't the dockyard mateys go on strike at one stage? I'm sure they did. But that was really awful, really bad, because I had got a lot of goodies that I'd bought in Cape Town. And lost it. But incidentally, I seem to remember that before we went on the attack on Sicily, we were told to land a lot of our uniform, etc. We were in white tropical gear, and only to wear that. And it took about 4 years before we got any of it back. And when we did get it back, a lot of it was missing. So we got compensation. But what I did leave on board, I don't know. There were various things which dockyard mateys stole. I took a lot home, but there were various essentials.
Was there any friction between naval personnel and dockyard personnel?
There was then, after because a lot of people lost things. But I don't think so. Certainly in RN ships, you played up to them for them to do extra work for you. I mean, for the shipbuilders and repair people, you played up to them and said, would you put, particularly in the wardroom, I mean, you know, put that this in the corner, another cabinet here, and so forth. Oh, yes.
So it was a mixed relationship.
Oh, quite so.
After your leave, where did you go then?
Now, can I... So I left Tegelberg and I joined the Durban Castle, which was a Union Castle liner.
And when roughly would that be? September 43?
No, it would have been earlier, because it would have been August, because the invasion at Salerno was September 8th, 9th. So I suggest it was sometime in August, yes. And the Durban Castle... went to Mirza al-Kabir, Iran, and we secured alongside. And now there was the Marnix van St. Aldegonde, a very big Dutch liner, a beautiful Dutch liner, the Durban Castle, I think the Duchess of Bedford, those three. There may have been another one. And then there was the American headquarters ship, the Samuel Chase. So we arrived alongside this big mole at Key, it was a mole in fact, at Merceau Cabir. Now, there were a lot of American troops came down and joined the Marnix events in Aldegonda. Now, don't forget, I had the LCSM, and my friend had his LCAs. And he was told that there was an operation. We had no clue where it was, the next attack. But he was told that the Durban Castle was not going in. And I now know, I believe there was a shortage of water in order to accommodate troops. You had to have water. I believe that was the case. But so I went along and I saw the captain of the chief of staff to the American admiral. And this is how I call myself a stowaway. Because I said to this captain in Samuel Chase, look, I have an LCSM, I have a marine crew. I've missed out. Do I go back about my crew or not? About my crew, because it was changed.
Oh, yes, we'll do that now
later.
Then.
Yes, all right.
No, do that now.
Yes, right. My crew after Sicily complained that they were unruly, the discipline had gone. So when they came back to UK, they'd been in Sicily, they all put in a request to go back to Eastney Barracks. The corporal who was in charge of the guns and in charge of the Royal Marines, I agreed. But I said, now, no way does so-and-so, there were two of them. I think McQuillan was one, and there was certainly a man called Hampton who did very well, and he got DSM in Salerno. I wouldn't allow them to go, but the rest, they were delighted to get out of it and to go back to Eastney. So I said, right, made a report on each one. I handed the report to them, and I said, when you get down, I rang up the commanding officer at Eastney and said that these men had to be disciplined. They wanted to get out. Of course, they didn't know that I'd rung the commanding officer. I also sent the chits to the commanding officer at Eastney. This was sealed to each Royal Marine, and they went back, and by God, they were put through it. I know that. They were really put through and disciplined. And I was sent a new crew, and they were superb. They were very, very fine men.
How about McQuillan and Hampton?
Hampton did very well afterwards, as I said.
They weren't affected by this
semi-mutiny? No.
So the McQuillan drinking incident had been a one-off?
Yes, that's right.
But they were both normally ordinary...
Decent chaps. So...
Were saying you got your crew...
So I got my crew. I had permission from the chief of staff to the admiral in Samuel Chase headquartership to have my ship, my LCSM, to be put onto the foredeck of the Marnix van St. Aldegonda by some derrick, ship's derrick. And so... They were put on board. Now, Wallace in the Durban Castle was extremely annoyed that here was I going into an action and his flotilla was not going into action.
Now, his flotilla, these were LCAs.
LCAs.
They were the landing craft.
That's right. So he was extremely annoyed. Of course, we didn't know that it was going to be Salerno. Anyway, we filled up with the 36th Texas Division. That was, they had not been in action. They were, as it subsequently, in my view, turned out, they were untrained. But we sailed. Now, one of the things I remember was going, we were told it was Salerno. One of the things I well remember was going past Cape Bon an evening, and there was a surgeon on board, an American surgeon, who very much criticized our own surgeons from the 8th Army because they'd been in the American Army. He was telling me about one of our chaps was going to cut off somebody's leg and he stopped it. They were quite brilliant, these American surgeons. But then I also met a Frenchman. And this Frenchman told me an extraordinary thing, which I don't think's ever been published, and that is that he was associated with Marshal Pétain. And he said quite categorically that he was sent by his ADC to Pétain. He was told to come over to North Africa by Pétain. And you remember Darlan was also in North Africa, to our embarrassment. Now, people say that Darlan did not know that we were going to land. In my view, from this French colonel, Pétain did know, and Darlan did know about the invasion. True or false, I don't know, but interesting. Anyway, we got off the Bay of Salerno in the south, a place called Piastum, about 7 or 8 miles, and it was announced that Italy had surrendered. This was the night of the 8th, 9th. And there was great jollity. The discipline went all to hell. We all thought we'd be in Naples the following day, that Italy had surrendered and there would be no opposition, which was a natural thought. Well, as you know, what happened. The craft were lured, and the Americans have a system of going round in circles, whereas we go straight into the assault. And this was
Could you explain?
They go round in circles until all the craft are there, and then when they get an order from the HQ, right, go, they go. But they
all in line abreast?
Yes, in line astern, and then for the assault. I mean, you're from 6 miles out, 6, 7 miles out. Well, they went on round and round and round, and we were losing the advantage of darkness. And I just lost my rag on this when I said, for God's sake, let's go in. What had happened was we were H plus 60, not HR. It wasn't the assault. It was H plus 60 minutes. We were the second people to go in. But what in fact happened was that a ship had been mined off closer to the... And there was panic stations. Anyway, I said, come on, in we go. And it was daylight, and when we got close to the beach, there was absolute havoc. The beach hadn't been taken. There were men swimming close to the beach. They had been wiped out on the first attack. And also there were these landing craft in flames, and one in particular was, I don't know, the gun ammunition was on fire, and there were six men inside. And anyway, I remember very well Hampton and ourselves going up to rescue these men. We rescued five of them, and then there was one man who was sitting over the bow of this LCM, and he got his eye out. His teeth were out, and he was in a terrible mess. The Germans had seen us. They'd fired on us. We'd fired on them. But they could see that we were rescuing. But they opened fire. It was a four-barrel, 20-millimeter machine gun, which is a deadly weapon. They opened fire on us, and I'm sorry to say I had to leave that man because I wasn't going to have our chaps. I have photographs of this. I wasn't going to have our chaps killed. But certainly Marine Hampton did a wonderful job in going in and orating and taking these chaps out, and also giving morphia to them. So we landed.
Now, you were engaged. You said you fired.
What we had fired.
What was your target? Could you see?
You could see the dead on the beach and the wounded on the beach, and up at the top of the beach, there was brushwood, and there was a machine gun position, as I tell you, which was firing at the troops that some of them were still trying to get ashore. But so we re-identified it.
This was another pillbox, was it, or a
no? It
trench
was was a trench affair, inside brushwood camouflage.
While you were doing the rescuing, would your LCMS still be engaging?
No way. We wouldn't do that. I mean, it was we wouldn't fire at him, and we didn't expect him to fire back. Perhaps I'm too honest, but we didn't expect him to fire back at people that we were rescuing, these wounded, and people who were swimming in the water. And then we took them to an American
You seem
craft.
To, during these assaults, you do seem to have this twin role, though, which, you know,
yes,
which can lead to that sort of thing, of being an offensive weapon, and quite often, but this is the second time, you've been heavily involved in rescue work as well.
Yes.
Do you think there's a dichotomy in the roles that you know...
I think it's a natural reaction. If you see people who are in a hopeless situation, you're obviously going to assist them. I must admit that my primary job was possibly to have left them and to have engaged the machine gun, which we did do after I'd landed, put them on board another boat that was going out back to the these American ships.
Would there have been a function for a boat purely designed as a rescue boat, though? Perhaps a fast motor launch or something like that?
Yes, I suppose there could have been. I didn't know of any.
But that wasn't included?
No.
There were either landing craft or LCMS.
That's right.
So you'd abandoned the attempt to rescue this last of the six.
That's right. Landed the survivors that we got, put them on board another ship that was going out, landing craft that was going out, and then we went back to engage this 24-barrel 20mm. Now this might sound fantasy, but it is true, I assure you. The Americans by then had not. The beach was taken by the enemy, and I saw one of these buffaloes or one of these artillery pieces coming in, you know, with tracks, you know, waterborne. And I said to this major, you go into further up the beach, you're safe. You go in, and I will lead a bayonet attack on this, I mean, it sounds bravado, on this, and fire from the sea and land and attack this machine gun post. So anyway, he went further up the coast, went ashore, and we went in, and my Marines were on the bow. There was no bow that came down. It was the ordinary bow. We were damned extremely lucky because machine gun, he saw us come in. Why he didn't fire earlier, I'll never know. But he waited until we were a matter of yards off the beach. And then he opened fire, and that was really, really frightening. I was behind my Marines were on the bow. I had my revolver ready to jump ashore, and fortunately he fired, and he couldn't depress it. Yes, he couldn't depress his guns further down, and in effect they passed over our heads very close. So I saw no reason at all of attacking such a vicious machine gun post, four-barreled. I mean, there was a tracer. It was very frightening. So we went full astern and abandoned our attack. Well, even then he didn't fire at us. We were sitting duck. But we fired at him when we got to, 100, maybe less than that, say 75 yards out. And this is where I think we were extremely fortunate, because it was brushwood up at the top there. No American troops could get in on the beach at all south of this particular machine gun position, which was a vital beaches. We put 4-inch smoke mortar right along the top, and extraordinary, it all caught fire. So by the flames, it knocked out the machine gun position. I mean, we did it originally to put a smoke screen round, but it really caught fire. So, I mean, it was late, what was December 8th, 9th. So that was the knockout of that machine gun position. Then we saw...
What had happened to the buffalo that was landing?
That I never knew. I must say, I'm sorry to say, I had little or no regard for the poor fellows, the Texas Division. They were not disciplined. I was very annoyed with that buffalo man, because I thought that he would have, I'd have seen him later, or seen him, he would have indicated what action he did. They weren't particularly good. They weren't like the Rangers. But anyway, this was knocked out, and then I saw an aircraft, very interesting, an aircraft, Spitfire, you know, I showed you the photograph of that. That landed on the beach. It had been shot down, and it was he shot down three. Remember Priber, I showed you the photograph. And that landed on the beach. Now, that gave us the indication there were no mines on that beach, because it didn't blow up. It made a crash landing. And so this was this also gave the indication to the others, to the soldiers, and they went in. There was no opposition at that moment at all, because there was a little bit from the Tower de Piastum, but I got out by then. We'd done our job, to my way of thinking, and we went back to this Marnix van St. Eldegonde. And then the crisis came, because I thought there were the Texas troops were a long way inland, but not a bit. And something had happened in the reserves that we had on board. We were told to escort them into the beach. So we did that. There were several landing craft crowded with the Texas division, and we went in, and so I said to myself, well, I'm going to see this machine gun position, which is at the top of the beach. And that's when I showed you those photographs. They were dead all over the beach. Going up to this machine gun position had knocked a lot of Texas people out. And so we went up to the machine gun position, and one of the chaps said, don't touch those binoculars because it could be booby-trapped. And I was just looking at it when up came a whopping big landing ship tank, a ship, not a landing craft tank, to discharge its tanks. This would be in the afternoon. And as I say, I thought they were miles away, the Germans, safe. When this tank came out to the, the gateway or the through the brushwood, when there was a most awful stunk, and you could hear these mortars or shells, you know, come over, and they landed right on top of the beach. They didn't hit the tank, but they hit my craft. And we were up looking at this gun position. Most frightening, because all the stones and the muck came up, you know. It was the first time I'd been under real shell fire ashore. And, of course, I admired the army for suffering that sort of thing. But it stopped, and then we went down to our landing craft, which had been held in the bow. There were one or two people killed by a motor lorry. Anyway, we got the nails out of the mortar box. We had signal flags and we had some canvas, and we got it together, you know, repaired the hole in the bow, and we started off back to our ship. Lovely Sunday, lovely sunny day, and I thought we'll go by the mainland, by the headland, and we were sunbathing. It was quiet. Everything, it was wonderful. We'd done the job. We were out of action. When suddenly there was a shell landed very, very close to us. This was from a big gun that was in one of the mountains, and it had, you know, in one of the tunnels. It had obviously come. We were sitting ducks. We were going very slow, and I suddenly realized that this shell, very close, and I made the right decision. I altered course immediately into where the shell had landed, and the next shell landed on the port side. If I'd gone to port, we'd have had it. And there were only four, but that was frightening. And then we came back on board the Marnix Van St. Aldegonda, where that night we got back on board the Marnix Van St. Aldegonda, and it so happened that there was a rating. One of our ratings from an LCA who was badly wounded on touching down. He was on the stern and he was badly wounded, and he was brought back to the Marnix Van St. Aldegonda, and he was put into the hospital there. In the afternoon, some prisoners were brought alongside from the Hermann Göring division. There were 50 of them, I think, and the Dutch captain refused to take them on board. Because he said that if this rating died, which he did subsequently, he would not be responsible for the behavior of his crew. In other words, the Dutch absolutely hated the Germans and they would have, you know, done something horrible. So he refused to take them, which was their attitude during the war. Then the night of the 10th, the ship was straddled by three bombs. It was a very severe bombing raid at moonlight. When we were straddled, the water from the very, very close mist that we had went onto the upper deck and dripped down. And I really thought at the time that we had been hit because there was water all around. The ship was not badly damaged. But whilst I and my colleague, who was the man who eventually introduced me to the midget submarines, were looking over from the side of the ship, we were looking towards the island of Ischia or Capri. Anyway, it was towards Naples. We suddenly saw a terrific explosion, and this was the USS destroyer Rowan, which was hit by torpedoes from E-boats. out of Naples, and there were 71 survivors out of 200. This was the only ship, USS ship, that sank. I know the Savannah was hit, and I know that our monitor, the Abercrombie, which had huge bulges on its side and 15-inch guns, I know that she was mined as well.